And when they told me that Riley has sickle cell, that's when shit started to get real. And it was just all a lot, a mix of emotions, but a lot of guilt, a little bit of shame because of the, like, my attitude towards it beforehand. And just, yeah, just a lot of guilt and feeling like, wow, like, I've done this to my unborn child.
We host, we talk, we write, we laugh, we cry, we love. We are Black Mums Upfront.
You know me, guys, I'm always mouthing off about something on Twitter or Instagram. You know how I do.
Just but in like, life generally, Karina, I feel.
I just don't want you to put this on me, but I'm a mouthy little git, as you all know. But yeah.
Really?
you'd never guess, right? You'd never guess. But yeah, no, I wrote a tweet last week because I was just so pissed off and fed up. Seeing people donate to like random GoFundMe accounts. And I was just really, really annoyed.
And this was about Richard, the young boy who sadly passed away in Epping Forest. And what did your tweet say?
So I guess for those of you who don't know, Richard Orokaya, I can always mispronounce his surname, Orokaya. He was a 19-year-old black boy that had gone missing in London. I think he was originally from Shepherd's Bush, and he went missing in March a few weeks ago. He also suffered from sickle cell, but his body was found in a lake in Epping Forest last week. And so there were loads of different people who had launched GoFundMe accounts, apparently to support the family, but didn't actually know the family directly. So loads of them were getting called out on social media. And one of them was trying to raise like £100,000, but didn't even know his mum's name. Like the blurb on the GoFundMe account said Richard's mum, like not even her name. So I just did a tweet saying, look, if you'd like to do something practical to honour Richard's memory, then please give blood, as only 1% of the black community give blood. And if you have sickle cell, you require a regular transfusion. So that tweet literally just blew up, went viral.
So only 1%? That's crazy. Yep. So I love that your tweet went viral. How viral, Karina? Go on, tell us what happened.
So, do you know what? I just send things out like in a rant. Like I didn't even expect it to go viral. But
I know, but your idea, because my idea of going viral is if someone, like three people maybe repost something that I do.
No, this went viral in that I think at last count, maybe 800,000 people had seen the tweet. Loads of people had retweeted it, had reposted it. I saw like some of the gossip blogs that I keep telling myself I've got to stay out of their comments. Like they had posted it up. And then even I had a meeting with NHS Blood and Donation and some other people, some other like organisations a few days later. And they basically said that that day, that Thursday that I did the tweet, they saw a significant increase in registrations for blood donations from the black community. And so, yeah, that's why we really wanted to talk about sickle cell today.
Wow, that is amazing and kind of a great testament to the power of social media and like wanting to do something, because I think sometimes you can feel so powerless in these situations. But this is a really important subject, and it's something we've wanted to talk about for quite a while. Last year, before lockdown, we had an amazing guest booked on to record with us. But obviously, because of COVID and the lockdown restrictions, it all had to be kind of postponed. But we are pleased to announce that she is here joining us today.
Yes, yes, yes. We are so proud and so honoured to welcome Miss Jordan Dunn, supermodel, actress, all-round, amazing mama. She is about to be up front with us. Welcome, Jordan. We are so happy to have you here.
Thank you guys for having me and thank you for the introduction.
Oh, no worries. But before we get started, we always kind of want to find out a little bit more about our guests. So we've got a quick fire round for you.
Okay, love that.
So we'll say to our sound engineer, cue the timer, please. Perfect. Okay, so don't even think about it. Just say whatever comes to your mind. You ready?
Yep.
Okay. Curry chicken or curry goat?
curry goat.
Yes. Okay, bra or no bra?
No bra.
Yeah. Fresh Dance. Prince or My Wife and Kids?
Ooh. My Wife and Kids.
Ooh. Yeah. North London or South London?
Be very careful, neither. Jordan. Let me tell you
well,
something.
No, no,
Jordan.
No. My fiance's from North, so I'm going to have to say North London.
No,
sorry.
No. Get off the pod right now. She's got to go.
We're
got to go. Yeah,
edit.
We're gone.
Edit.
Go. You are on a pod with three South Londoners.
I'm sorry, but I'm marrying a North Londoner, so I have
loyalty.
To, you know.
Loyal, not going to lie. You know, North exactly. London's got some decent guys over there. I'm not going to lie.
Decent guys. I thought you were going to say it's got some decent parks and architecture.
No, guys. The Mandem are in North London still. The Mandem are in North London.
Okay. Pokemon or Fortnite?
I'm going to say Pokemon.
Okay. Bath or showers?
Baths.
Trainers or heels?
Right now, I'm going to say trainers.
Yeah, I think we've all been in trainers for like a year now. Yeah. Wigs or braids?
Braids.
Vodka or rum?
Rum.
Summer or winter?
Summer all day.
And our last one, plant in or plantain?
Come on, plant in.
Yay!
Come on.
We have to shout on Anadua, who is always like repping the plantain crew, and she's not here today, so shout on Anadua. So thank you, Jordan. I mean, look, we've got so much to talk to you about today, but can we just do a little quick rewind in case any of us want to kind of retrain and change careers and become supermodels? Can you tell us a little bit about your amazing career and how it started? You've just smashed so many glass ceilings and you've done so many firsts. And yeah, just how did you kind of summarize, how did you get into this?
It all started in little old Primani in Hammersmith. I got scouted there after school and got scouted, and the lady gave me her number and I knew what agency she was with because it was like a big modern agency that had Kate Moss and Lily Cole and all these girls that I knew, and I was like, oh wow, so this is legit. So I called my mum and like she was screaming down the phone, and then the next day we went down there. And they just wanted to sign me there and then. And then it kind of just kind of kicked off. Like around that time, I was in year 10 and I was doing work experience. Well, I was about to do work experience, and I was going to be doing work experience at another modeling agency. And they were like, no, you can't do that. That's our ops. You can't have you being over there. So do your work experience with us. And so like, I remember my first day of my work experience, like I went off to do a test shoot while all the other girls were like, have to go through doing people's books and doing all that work. And it kind of just like took off from there. And then I like got signed to an agency in New York. Then I went to New York and did like my first show season. And I walked about like 80 something shows in a season, wow. Which is just like madness when I think about it. And then, yeah, I think what really put me on the map was walking for Prada. And it was such a big thing. And at the time, I didn't really understand it. I just remember everyone was just like, this is huge. And then I realized it's huge because there hasn't been a black model walk for Prada since Naomi, like 10 years. So I was like, oh, wow. But once that happened, I just remember my mum just like sending me all of these newspapers and magazine articles, and it was just
proud.
Like huge. Wow. Yeah. And yeah.
And how it started. That's so young, like to have that level of kind of success. That's crazy. Like most, I'm thinking when I was in year 10, I was like excited to like smoke a spliff and I don't know. Like,
of course you were, Andy.
Of course,
stuck
Andy.
Behind a bike shed or something. But that is amazing. That is amazing and just super incredible.
Thank you.
Yeah, I remember just drinking lots of Diamond Whites. I didn't even know what a Diamond White was, but I just knew it was a drink and I was like, I'm supposed to be cool with it. So that was
I was going to say, Jordan, do you remember what you were in Primark buying that day when your life essentially changed completely?
Yeah, no, you know what? I remember just not even wanting to go to Primark. Like, I just wanted to go home and my friends were like, no, let's go. And I think we were in the sunglasses section, just trying on sunglasses. And the woman just kept eyeing us up and it like made me feel very uneasy. And I was just like, wait, does she really think we're going to teeth out Primark? Like, come on, like, stop. Like, I was getting kind of aggy. I was like, why is she keep looking at us? And then she came over and it was like, oh, okay.
It could have ended so differently.
Definitely. Definitely.
Different. Yeah. But no, I think that is amazing. And then we're going to fast forward a little bit because I know, you know, we're all mums here and especially Andy and I, we are actors, we act. And so, you know, having children is a bit like a, oh my goodness, how's that going to change my career? How's that going to change my focus? And especially as a model, having a child where obviously your body is your income, is your career. Yeah. Did that scare you? Like you were gonna have a baby? Were you worried at all about what that meant for your career or anything at all?
Yeah, I mean, in the beginning, when I first found out that I was pregnant, actually, once I decided that I was going to keep the baby, because in the beginning, I was very much just like thinking about what other people would want me to do, what other people will think. And there was a lot of, oh, you know, yeah, I was thinking about what other people would want me to do. And then until...
As we all do. Yeah.
I remember seeing the articles at the time and the news at the time and everyone, and I only remember seeing it in the newspapers and magazines, and that whole conversation was, that's it, Jordan's career is over now.
Like, yeah.
It's over before it's even, you know, started to get going because she's having a baby. And I think that's a conversation that so many women have to put up with or hear that, oh, you know, now that you're having a baby, that's it, your life's over, or you're not going to excel in your career. And it's really, I don't want to say upsetting, but it really, like, it pisses me off when I hear Absolutely. That narrative.
Yeah, it's very discouraging. Like, I had Jordan done is done. Like, that's what I would, that's what I had.
Wow.
And like,
that was,
and it's like, oh, rah.
Wow.
And then it just, yeah, it's discouraging. And then you kind of, at the time, I was like, you kind of do feed into it and then you do kind of second guess things. But then I was just like, no, listen, I'm not here to live other, like, I'm here to live my life and I'm not here to live a life what other people want me to live. Like, I don't even know you. I'm doing what I deem is best for me. And if you don't like it, I don't really care. So I kind of had to just get into that mindset, and just be like, stand with my decision and just be like, I have to live my life for me and not for nobody else. So,
amazing.
Yeah.
What an empowering thing for people to hear. I don't know if they'd be able to get away with that now, the press saying that.
No, it's just 100%.
So, I mean, that's just so like anti-feminist in every single way.
Yeah.
And do you feel ever that, As a black woman, you were treated in a different way by the press, the media, or the industry in general?
Oh, 100%. Like, every time I would do something, it would be like winning Model of the Year or something, anything positive, there would be like a negative tone to it. They would then have to mention my son's father's, the fact that he was in prison and da-da-da. Like, there always has to be that, or they would be like, oh, like single parent, or her mum was like, it always has to be that. It couldn't just be, let's just celebrate and congratulate. It just has to be like, oh yeah, but like, you know, her baby daddy was in prison for this and that. Da, da, da. It's like, okay, this happened how many years ago? Even when I was in my last relationship, like, they would talk about that. And it's like, wait, that happened like 10, 11 years ago. Like, why are we still doing this? And I don't see it. When it was for other people, my other peers, they would never talk about their things when they, like, certain things would drop out of bags and certain substances, like, nothing like that. It'd always be like, yes, look what they're wearing or look what they're doing. There'll never be any other information that would be quite damaging or that doesn't relate to the current situation. So, that would used to piss me off. Sorry. Mm. Yeah, it really used to get up to me.
I just think as a black woman, especially when you're in the public eye, like you said, the media will use anything to kind of bring back dirty past, or, and even in the context of, you know, your son's dad being in prison, so what? There are so many people, high powered people, that, you know, should be in prison for money laundering or, you know, fraud or whatever, but they're not.
There's so many high powered people who don't even know how many kids they have. Let's not get it twisted. Exactly. Yes. Because could you imagine, if Barack Obama had a few too many kids that he didn't know about? That would be the only thing that we would talk about. Yeah, but yet some people in this country can go get away with a lot of things that other people couldn't.
Yeah, facts.
Absolutely. No, it's so true. But even that kind of conversation, that kind of like delving into someone's life like that, that's only select, you know, there's only a select few that get that. There are some people that completely bypass that. And it is, and you, how old were you kind of when this was happening?
Like early 20s.
That's a lot. Yeah. Just even when you said Jordan Dunn is done, I mean, that to be able to come and see that, I mean, that is quite, that's a lot of pressure. How did you, how did you kind of cope with that and manage that sort of stress? Or,
I mean, I'm just really blessed that I have a great support system, and my mom would just reassure me, be like, Jordan, don't pay attention to all the noise and all of that. Like, you're doing this, you're doing, like, just blur that out. Don't even look at it. Like, that's when I just stopped looking at like forums and blogs and reading about myself, because it just didn't make me feel good. So I was like, yeah, you know what? I just need to just live my life and just remain positive, even and though it's hard when people want to just bring you down.
You had a new baby. So essentially, you know, you could get wrapped up. I know Karina talks a lot about how when she had her child, it saved her life almost. It just changed everything. And, you know, kids, they do that. They really do. They humble you very quickly. Yeah. And they make you realize just actually all that is just a pile of piss. It's just fluff. Mm-hmm. This is what's important. And so you had amazing Riley, who is he 10 years old now?
He's 11.
Oh, he's 11. Oh, okay.
He's the same age as Soraya. He's so the same age as my daughter.
Yeah, we've all got like similar ages. And so, you know, raising a black boy in the UK, how is that? Because I know I've got daughters, but Endy has basically an 11-year-old son as well. So do you have worries, as I'm sure you do?
Definitely. And especially with everything that has been going on, but last year as well was a lot. And I wanted to make sure that Riley is aware of what's going on and not kind of, didn't want to like baby him in it, like give him some kind of like fairy tale and like fluff it up, like just give it to him real. Mm-hmm. But for me, I think what I've not been struggling with, but have to then realize that Riley's experience is going to be different to my experience, not just because like he's a male, I'm a female, but also the way that he identifies himself. So like he's lighter skinned. So it's like he's had kind of troubles with identifying and owning his blackness, because he sees his uncles and sees me and his nanny is like, and he's like, why am I not like you lot's color? Why is my hair like this? And da, da, da. So I have to make sure that he's comfortable with his identity, and then also let him know how the world's going to identify him, but don't even pay attention to that. Just know they're going to paint some kind of picture of you, but you, what's important is what you know about yourself and you know who you are. So for me, it's just been like making sure that he embraces his blackness and knows that he's a black boy. And also even, because I always say like, Riley, you're black, like that's you, da, 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 and let him know there's different tones of black and everything. But then it maybe he might want to say that he identifies with mix, and that's okay as well. So for me, it's just been like dealing with that as well.
Yeah. I think it's such a balance. I know we've talked about it a lot, is how you can prepare your children for the world as it is, but also raise them for the world that we want it to be. Mm. You know what I mean? And like how we balance that is really, really difficult. And I know certainly with my son, like, you know, he in some ways he's very aware and he hears lots of conversations and is super kind of clued up. And in other ways, he's really like naive to it. And it's, you know, you want to protect that. But that's, I certainly think conversations will change as well, because so many people are mixed now. Like, there's such, you know, people are mixing more and more. So I do think even the conversation around race will kind of evolve. So
yeah,
that's crazy. And just talking about how, you know, he is diagnosed with sickle cell. Is that, how did you find that out? How did that happen? Because obviously a lot of people listening might not know much about it at all. What was the beginning of that journey like?
Well, I always knew that I have sickle cell trait, and his father also has the trait. But I mean, I didn't know much about the disease, apart from my mum would always tell me about it, because she's like, Jordan, like, be careful, because you know, you two both have the trait. That means you can, your child, if you guys do have a child, your child will be sickle cell. And I was like, okay, cool, but whatever. Like, I was a bit naive and a bit ignorant. I just didn't really know much about it. Didn't know anyone who had it, didn't know the ins and out of it at all. So it wasn't till I, you know, for my screening for it, and when they told me that Riley has sickle cell, that's when shit started to get real. And it was just a mix of emotions, but a lot of guilt, a little bit of shame because of my attitude towards it beforehand. And just a lot of guilt and feeling like, wow, like, I've done this to my unborn child. And that was a hard pill to swallow. And then afterwards, doing my research on it, going on Google, and I feel like that's never really a great thing, because you just see so many things, and I'm reading articles and stories that were like written like years ago. So then it's like, you know, life plan of like 40, and then I'm like, oh my God, and then this, and then they talk about the pain that they go through, and it was just a lot. And like, not knowing anybody that has gone through that, like, I was the first ones out of my friends to like have a child. So it was like, I didn't have no one to like bounce off of. And it was quite difficult in the beginning.
Yeah.
Just not having that mental support.
Yeah.
I think what you say is really interesting about trying to find support, not even trying to find support, but to find information around sickle cell. I know one of my ex-partners, he didn't even tell me that he had sickle cell. And I remember him coming to my house and he was like, oh, like, I think I've eaten something. And he was having a crisis, but he wouldn't tell me. Like, he just didn't tell me. And so I'm thinking, there's me like an idiot thinking he's got food poisoning. I'm like, yeah, that's why you got to stop eating Chinese and blah, blah, blah. And, you know, I was like, let me get you some water. And he was like, oh, I think I've got some stomach tablets in the car, so I'm going to go down and get them. And like, it was just thinking back on it now, once I did find out, because I had a small understanding of what sickle cell was, I was like, I can't believe you were literally in my house having a crisis and you didn't say anything to me. You literally just in there in pain and not saying anything. Wow. And even when I wanted to find out more about sickle cell, because my daughter has the sickle cell trait, when I found out that she had the trait, and also knowing that my ex-boyfriend had sickle cell, trying to find information about it, it was just a lot. Like, there was a lot of information when all I wanted to, and that's me saying it from just wanting to find out about it, because someone that I care has it. I can't imagine as a mother when you're researching this and you just have all of this information, how that must feel. Like, at the time I was like, I just want a condensed piece of information that lays it out very clear and concise for me. Doesn't try to scaremonger me. Isn't something that was written, you know, 30 years ago. Like, I just want something that is recent, concise, and straight to the point.
But also, if there isn't a lot of information out there about it, you just assume, oh, well, it can't be that bad. They can just, you know, it's just a little bit like a bit of a cold. They have a bit of pain. Like, you just assume that it's not a huge thing, but actually it's huge. And there isn't enough awareness around it. And if there was more, then people would take it more seriously. And we could probably, you know, start to really get more answers. Because I'm sure, like, as a mum, weren't you trying to be like, there must be a cure. There must be a, like, I'm going to fix him. And so he'll never have to go through this ever again, like, as we do.
Yeah. And, you know, and I think also because with sickle cell, there isn't like a face to it. Like you don't, like with other diseases, you can mm-hmm. tell when someone has cancer or anything, but with sickle cell, you can't, there's nothing, you can't, there's not a face, there's not a thing to identify anyone that has sickle cell. So then in my head, I think, is that the reason why there's a lack of awareness about it? Because it isn't in your face. You don't see someone whose hair's falling out or going, you don't see the pain. So then is that the reason why people don't care as much? I don't know.
Is it only or it mainly affects Black people? Is that right?
But the thing for me is, like, I think people like to say it's a Black disease when it's a blood disorder disease. Right, so it's like it's a blood disease, but yes, it mainly affects the Black community.
I'm just wondering as to why maybe we don't have as much information and it's not out there as much. Hopefully it's not connected to that, but it wouldn't surprise me. I've done a little bit of research, even from when we were hoping to get you back on the pod before, but actually I knew very little about sickle cell. So can you kind of explain what it is for me and for anyone listening, like what in a nutshell, kind of what it is?
So sickle cell disease is a blood disorder disease, and it's where the red blood cells are basically, they're like half shaped, they're sickled, where if you have healthy red blood cells, they're like round discs. So when someone who has sickle cell, when it's just the red blood cells, when they're flowing through the body, they sometimes can get stuck during like a change in environment, if their immune system's low. And that's when it's called a crisis. And it's the pain, they say, is just like no pain that you can imagine. Like it's just a lot. So then you would have to go into hospital and get a blood transfusion and get your oxygen levels up. So, wow. Yeah.
Gosh, see, that's like a massive thing to live with, essentially, then. And like constantly you're having to kind of monitor. So obviously a lot of pain. Is it important that it's managed properly? Can it be dangerous if it isn't?
Yeah, so I just have to always make sure that Riley's at the right temperature, that he's not too cold or he's not too hot, make sure that he's well hydrated, making sure that he's eating well. Making sure that if he is doing any exercise where he's running up and down, that he takes breaks, and he listens to his body so he doesn't overexhaust himself, because that can trigger something. And make sure that he's rested up. So it's just like I'm always just like, make sure you got a coat, socks, this vest, on, or make sure you're doing this, and make sure you're doing that, and make sure you're doing that. And then he's just like, okay, mom, I get it. Like, and I just want him to just have fun. But then it's just like that extra layer of, I just don't want you to overdo it, where you might actually have to go to hospital.
And has that happened? Has he overdone it? Has he had any crisis where he has had to go in?
You know what? We're actually really blessed that Riley's only had one crisis when he was a baby, when that was his first ever one. And every time that he goes to the hospital now and he needs a blood transfusion, it's because he has a chest infection and they just want to prevent him from getting a crisis. So his oxygen level may be low and they're like, okay, we need him to, we don't want it to get to that point. So Riley hasn't actually experienced pain since his first crisis, which is like, touch wood, which has been great, been amazing.
And how often does he get that? So when he's had the chest infections, is that like maybe he's had a couple of blood transfusions a year, or is it like it's something that he's just very used to now?
Yeah, something that he's used to. The last blood transfusion was in 2019. And so like for me, the fact that since last year with the pandemic and now, like Riley hasn't gotten himself ill to the fact that he has to be in hospital, like is such a huge thing. I'm like, oh my God, like his health has been like 100%. So,
Yeah. It's like, I was saying this to the girls the other day, like I hadn't had a cold for like a year and a bit, because you know, you're stuck inside, everything's wiped down, everything's clean, like we're so like, you know, on it with all of that kind of stuff. So when he so it's important. So this is the point of this pod. How important is it that there is blood available for Riley when he goes into the hospital? Can he receive blood from a person who isn't from, you know, isn't black? Or does it have to be a certain type of blood that he needs to receive? Like, why is it important that we do need to start donating?
Yeah, I mean, the fact that there's only 1% of black donors is like so crazy to me. And I think to myself, when Riley is hooked up getting his blood, and the fact that it took somebody selflessly to just take like an hour or half an hour of their day to give blood that is helping my son get better. And I think that's the reason why I did a post. His last time he had a blood transfusion, I decided to put it up on Insta, just because obviously people know that my son has it or heard me speak about it, but they don't visually see it. And like, I was a bit like, should I? I don't really want to expose Riley. And obviously I asked him if it's okay, but I did it. And I think that was like an eye opener for people to see what people with sickle cell go through, to actually see a little boy having to have blood. So it's just for me, when I saw that, it's like, yeah, it's really important that there is that awareness and that people know that we need more blood donors, especially if it affects our people. Mm-hmm. Why aren't we then going out? Why aren't there more of us donating? And I get it, like, even for myself, I thought because I had the trait that I won't be able to, but that's not the case.
Yeah.
And even I just thought, oh, I wouldn't be able to do it because I have the trait.
A lot of people think that.
That's
a lot of people.
Misconception.
Yeah.
I did see on Twitter Karina fighting people saying, no, you can give blood.
No, because I feel like for me, right, it's just another example of how medical education, healthcare system, and just medicine in general discriminates against the black community. Yeah. Because when, you know, I think people have somehow or somewhere down the line been told, right, that because they have the sickle cell trait, they can't give blood. Okay. And when I'm saying, on the same tweet that I did like a link, I linked my tweets and even included why it's important to have blood from the black community. And also that if you do have the sickle cell trait, you can still potentially give blood. That shouldn't be a barrier to giving blood. And people are like, I have the sickle cell trait and I'm anemic and I've been told I can't give blood, so your statement is false. And I'm like, well, no, my statement isn't false. You can give blood even if you have the sickle cell trait. The reason why you can't give blood is because you are anemic. And yes, sometimes, you know, having the trait does cause anemia, but that's not the reason why you can't give blood. The reason why you can't give blood is because you're anemic. And I think this lack of education and just, you know, even just the conversation around it, like it really does need to be had. And, you know, I think for us as kind of black mums up front, and just myself as well, like, I want people to be educated about things that affect us as the black community. So if it means that I've got to go and read a book or read up about something to educate myself so I can educate somebody else, then I'll do that. Because I think as well, seeing like my ex go through it and, you know, being so much pain as well, it's like, that really hit home for me, that actually, and it goes back to what you were saying, Jordan, about how maybe because it's not visual and people don't see it, that they don't either empathize with it, or it doesn't resonate with them, or it's like an invisible illness. And I think more people do need to give blood, more people do need to educate themselves about the importance of giving blood, but also educate themselves from reputable sources. Because I got a few tweets of people saying, yeah, but they want to sell our blood to do like experiments and this, that and the other. And I'm like, guys, honestly, there's a time for conspiracy theories. And don't get me wrong, I understand the background to where these conspiracy theories come from. But as you know, there's a saying in Jamaica, right? You've got to pick sense out of nonsense. Like, pick some sense out of what it is that you're saying. Just last year, people were saying that, you know, COVID was caused by 5G. And here we are a year later, 5G masks are still up. Like, you know, we know that that's not the cause of COVID. But I do think people need to just educate themselves a little bit better, especially the black community, about things that affect us, and not think that everything is a conspiracy theory.
If there was no blood from black community, what would then happen to Riley? Like, what would his options be?
I think he would still be able to get blood, I think. Yeah, he would still be able to get blood, but I guess it'll just be less.
It's not as compatible.
Yeah.
So I only know this because I read up about it. Nat, you know me. So black people tend to have, I think it's 10 or 11 times more likely to have the Rho and B positive blood types. And those are the two blood types that are most commonly found amongst sickle cell sufferers. So if you have those blood types, then that is the blood that is more compatible with people who suffer from sickle cell. And that's why they want more black people, or why more black people need to donate, because we have the type of blood that is more commonly found amongst people that suffer from sickle cell.
Mm. Yeah. Jordan, you mentioned earlier about how you have the sickle cell trait, and his dad also had the sickle cell trait, but you didn't kind of maybe take it that seriously. So, I mean, is it, how do you say, I mean, I guess what I'm asking is, would you, when you, if you'd taken it more seriously, what would that look like? Would you have actually like thought about having children together? Is there anything you could have done to kind of protect against him having it? I don't know. Is there anything that could have been done differently?
I guess there would be the conversation of, do we want to have more children? And we'll just be more clued up and more educated on it. And then it'll just be like, okay, this is serious. This is something that's not going to, I mean, it's going to affect us, but it's affecting our child, and they could affect them long, for the whole life. So like moving forward, do we want to have more children together? Yeah. Like, is that, I think that would be the conversation.
And how do you know, you mentioned, Karina, that your daughter has the trait too. Is it something you're told at birth? How do you know that you have the trait?
Guys, let me tell you how I found out that Soraya has the trait. So obviously you have your blood taken when you are pregnant and whatever. I don't have the trait, so I can only assume it's her dad that has the trait. Obviously she was born, they test the baby, everything fine, cool. Didn't mention anything about sickle cell trait. Soraya had glue ear. Where basically she had like a buildup of, I want to say water, but it's more like, I think it was from when she was born, right? She had like a buildup of the liquid that, I don't know, the amniotic sac or whatever, I don't know, in her ear. And when they did her hearing test when she was born, it didn't give them the readings that she needed. So they told me that we had to come back a month later and have it redone. So me and her dad were like joking in that month, like, oh, not joking, but we're like, oh, I wonder if she's deaf, because obviously the hearing test wasn't come up. And like her dad would be like, Soraya. And he'd be like, nope, she turned and looks at me. So no, she's not deaf. And I'm like, will you stop shouting at my child? Anyway, went back for the hearing test. It was the reading was fine at that point, but I think she had already started building up this gunk in her ears. But at the time she had that reading, it was fine. Anyway, cut long story short, she then developed glue ear. So her nursery was saying that when she's talking, when they're talking to her, she's watching their mouth. So she's not listening with her ears. She's watching your mouth and then repeating the way that your mouth moves. So when you say banana, because obviously when you're saying the but, it looks like a put as well. So she was saying like banana and stuff like that, because that's what she thought it was. So she had to go in for an operation to have her ear drained so that she could start hearing properly. So they had to put her under general anesthetics. They have to take your bloods and everything. So it was at that point they came back up with like her bloods and stuff, say, yeah, it's all fine, she can have the general anesthetic. And they went, oh, you do know that she has the sickle cell trait, right? And I was like, no, what? They were like, yeah, she has the sickle cell trait. Has no one told you previously? And I was like, no, I haven't. And they were like, oh, yeah. So we'll just monitor, I think, but from her having the trait, when you do have like operation or whatever, they have to monitor your oxygen levels through your blood or something more. So, but it was kind of like, oh yeah, well, don't worry about it. But you know, if you're worried, speak to your doctor. There was no kind of like sitting down. And I literally remember when she went down to theatre, I was there like Googling, like, does this mean she's going to develop sickle cell, or like, what does it mean? And obviously had to research that
and,
for myself.
And does it mean she'll develop sickle cell?
No, so she won't develop sickle cell, but similar to what Jordan was saying is that if she was to have a child with somebody else that has the sickle cell trait, then there is a likelihood that that child will have sickle cell. And I think that's where the education piece comes from, because I've never had a conversation with my doctor about sickle cell trait or what it means or what that means for Sarai, like at all. I've had to research and know what that means for myself. And I just wonder if, say, for example, like there's people who don't have that capability to go and research for themselves, like, are they being properly educated and being able to make informed decisions? Because I will, you know, at the point that she starts to, you know, date and whatever, I'll draw home to her. You need to find out from your partners whether they have the sickle cell trait or not, because it can actually be something that quite serious, that when you go and have children, you could then end up having a child that has sickle cell.
And well, if Riley has children in the future, will they definitely have sickle cell because he's actually got sickle cell?
I think they would. There will still be the possibility that he can either get it or have the trait.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And talking of conversations, like, have you had to sort of sit down and explain everything to Riley, or is it just something that he's always, it's been part of his life?
So I only had the conversation with Riley. So I told Riley that he had sickle cell like only 2 years ago. Mm-hmm. I think it's just because at the point before that, it was like, I just didn't want him to use it as an excuse, or I didn't want him to feel different, or even though he did, because he's like, why do I always have to go to the hospital? Every time I come to the hospital, why do I have to take bloods? Why do I have to take penicillin every day? He was starting to ask these questions once he got older. And I just wanted to, that's when I felt like this is the time to talk to him about it, especially because he's now going into secondary school and he's going to need to be more responsible with himself and his health. And so I basically sat down with him and I got sent, I can't even remember the name of the book, but this is why it's important. That's why it's important to have even books that are children books talking about sickle cell, because that's, for me, that was the perfect way to tell Riley, to show him pictures of people that look like him or people that he knows what look like, and like talk about sickle cell. So we read the book together and then he was starting to like, oh, that's what I do. And then we spoke about it and it was kind of heartbreaking because his first thing was, he just looked at me. He's like, mommy, am I going to die? Does this mean I'm going to die? And no. He started crying and I was like, oh, Baba, no. And then, yeah. And afterwards it started to click. So he's like, oh, so that's why you're always on me for always wearing a coat. So
you're not just nagging.
You're not just being annoying, mom. That's why. And he started to get it. But yeah, in the beginning, he was just like, oh my God, what does this mean? Am I going to die? And I was like, no, I had to just reassure him. But yes.
Bless him.
I know we talk about kind of educating more and talking about it more. I know, Jordan, that you have recently become the patron of a new sickle cell charity or organisation. Yes. So tell us more about that.
Yeah, I'm so excited about this. It's called the SNL Foundation. And you know what? Everything last 2 weeks, when you guys were talking about Richard and then also Evan also, that week was such a triggering week for me. Yeah. But at the same time, and also while that was happening, Riley was in hospital as well. So it was just like a lot. But then at the same time, it was like a wake up call and just made me be like, okay, I need to just do more. Like, I have been talking about it, but now it's time to really put action into play and do more. So was reaching out. So then this came about. Met Layla, who is the founder of the SNL Foundation. And what I love about this foundation is that its main focus is about the mental health and emotional well-being and education about sickle cell. But it's mainly for people who have sickle cell and their families who want and need, it's not even want, it's the need of that mental and emotional support. Mm-hmm. It's that support. Because like I was saying in the beginning, even from the beginning of finding out that Riley had sickle cell when I was pregnant, if I had that support, if they then sat down with me and was to guide me through it, counsel me through it, I would have felt a lot better. And there isn't that support for people who are going through it, for the families, the keepers, and also the people who have sickle cell. So I just love the fact that there's no organization that is just solely focusing on the mental and emotional well-being of people who have sickle cell and their supporters.
Yeah.
So, yeah. And I think it's important, like, it's going to, they want to provide the community with traditional therapy and counseling and any other emotional well-being. They want to work with schools and hospitals and the workplace about educating them so there is better care and practice dealing with people with sickle cell.
Yeah, that's so important. So important.
You mentioned Evan, Jordan, and I think for those who are listening who don't know who Evan is, so Evan Smith, I think his surname was, he died in 2019, and just recently they had an inquest into his death, and it turns out that essentially the hospital that he was at, I think he went in via A&E, they weren't equipped or recognised how serious his sickle cell was and how it could affect the care that he was being given. And he was prescribed oxygen. Oxygen wasn't given to him. And he ended up calling, he was in like a triage bed, like when there's not enough beds on a ward, you get given like a extra bed. There was no call button or anything like that attached to this bed. And he was in so much pain that he ended up calling 999 from his hospital bed, just to say, you know, I am in so much pain. And he ended up having a heart attack and dying. And the coroner's report, I believe, said that if he had been given the oxygen when it was prescribed to him earlier on in the day, then the likelihood is he would have survived. And, you know, it's that lack of medical awareness within the healthcare system that is enabling our people from our community to die, which could have easily been preventable. So, you know, we are all for educating the community. So if there's anything that we can do as Black mums up front to kind of push that message and to, you know, yeah, push that message to the community and just help further the work that you guys are doing, you know, we'd be more than happy to do that, because I do think it is really important that we start holding, not just educating the community, but start really holding the medical industry to account, because they are the ones, you know, you have the, I was saying the other day, I've never seen an NHS advert on the mainstream about sickle cell, like never. And it's like you have adverts around cancer and how smoking causes cancer, and, you know, all of these different adverts that money is pushed behind to make people aware of it and to educate people. And, you know, a lot of time spent educating, you know, the future doctors and nurses. Where is the sickle cell education?
Yeah, this is why I think it's good that you are kind of facing it, Jordan, with this charity, this organization, because it is important to, like, use your platform as you're doing, and because you've got firsthand experience in it as well. So I think it's so good. What's your call to action? What do you want people listening to this to do? What's the message for them?
I think it's just to go out and donate. I think that's the most important thing. And also the most rewarding thing that you can do right now is to go and donate.
Yeah.
I
just think one thing you said that's so interesting around, like, whether or not to post about Riley's actual blood transfusion. And there's so, I can only imagine, you know, being the level of fame that you are, like, wanting to protect your private life. And then that being balanced against actually wanting to raise awareness. And it must be quite difficult to kind of negotiate that. I wondered just how having a child, I mean, we all know as mothers, having a child changes you. How having a child with sickle cell has changed you as a woman?
I guess more awareness.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's what it is. It's just being more aware, really. There's not much. Yeah, yeah, just being more aware.
Because I just think we want to protect our children so much. And when they have anything that impacts their health, it's just so, it can be really upsetting and stressful to witness.
Yeah.
And like, how do you manage that yourself?
I mean, I'm just so grateful that I have such a great support system. So it doesn't feel like I just have this load by myself. Like my mum she's extremely protective of Riley. And like for her, she's just like, oh, what? Everything, if we're together, she goes, oh, don't tell me it's going to be on Instagram. Like, she just wants to like protect Riley at all costs. And like, so I'm just very lucky that it's not this heavy load that I am having by myself. I have an amazing mom, his dad, my partner, my brothers, and even like my managers, they get it and they support me.
Yeah.
So it helps.
It takes a village. Mm-hmm. I was just about to say that it takes a huge village. But you are private, and I'm gonna have a little chat with you right now. You did mention that you are engaged.
Yep.
You found your man.
Has he got any friends? Or, next time, like, I'll drop my Instagram in the chat, babe. Just send it out to his friends, you know.
Okay.
Let me know if there's any decent single ones, you know.
Yeah,
you see that sisterhood. Natalie and I are both single, you know.
We're single, ready to mingle. But yeah, share the process. Like, you know, are you very happy? I can imagine you are very content and happy with your situation. And I know, obviously, we talked about this a lot, step parents and, you know, taking on a child. Is that been a weird dynamic for you in terms of, you know, integrating Riley into this new relationship and making sure that he's okay with it? Like, it's a minefield doing that whole step parent thing.
Dion is, I'm trying to think where to start. Like, Dion is the first person, because I'm very protective when it comes to Riley, of course. And I've been in situations or been in relationships where people are like eager to meet Riley, or I'm just like, not a lot of people get to meet Riley and get close to Riley. But I knew with Dion is like, I just knew that this is the person that I want to share my life with. And share my life. Riley is my life. Riley's my everything. So it's like, it was like a no brainer. I was nervous about the meeting, but it felt right. It's like, yeah, no, Riley, it's going to be fine. And I remember telling Riley, when I told Riley that I'm in a relationship, and he was so happy and so excited. He's like, so
oh, thank God.
So that's why you keep playing love songs, and that's why this person's name keeps pops up with love hearts up.
They're so eager.
Kids are fast, man. They're just so fast. Like, honestly, like, I can be having a conversation, not talking to my daughter at all. I could be having a conversation about something, and then she'll pop up like, oh, mum, don't forget you told so-and-so. Why are you listening to my conversation? Thank you for reminding me, but come out of my business.
Big people business.
Literally.
Yeah.
That's so funny. I remember when my son and my partner, like, meet, you know, getting to meet and introducing them, and I was like to my son, oh, you know, my friend, and he was like, oh, you're friend. I was like, oh God.
Oh,
outed.
Yeah. My daughter's been trying to marry me off for like the last 4 or 5 years. It's ridiculous. Like, in my Christmas cards and my birthday cards, she writes like, happy birthday, mum, or Merry Christmas, mum. Hopefully this will be the year that you'll find a boyfriend.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And my birthday just gone. She wrote, hopefully this will be the year that you get married. So now she's just completely given up. I don't know if she quite knows how marriage works, but apparently we've completely given up now on the whole relationship thing.
Just straight to marriage.
Yeah, she wants a sibling. So has Riley ever spoken to you about like wanting like siblings or anything like that?
Yeah, no. So, I mean, he, on his dad's side, he has a sister and also they, he has a sister. But like, yeah, he's been on my case with, mum, when are you going to get pregnant?
Stress.
Like, he is on me. Yeah. But like, actually, no, he was on me before I got into a relationship. And now I think it's when he... It's actually not. Now I think he realised that he has to... It's that kind of balance, because I found myself in the beginning, I'm getting dragged this way and that way. Like, they both want my attention. And I think Riley then realised, he was so happy that I was in a relationship, because I remember when I told him, he was like, oh, mommy, I'm so happy, I'm so proud of you. I was like, okay, thank you. And then I think when the realisation of it all, of I actually have to share my mum, because it's been me and Riley day one. So it's like, oh, raw, I actually have to share her. I don't know about this. And then like, he kind of did the less talking about a sibling. He's like, I don't really mind if it's just us, you know, mum. Like, it's fine. I've got a sister at my dad's. It's okay. And I've got cousins. It's fine. But now he's kind of gotten over that. And I've made sure that I had to have that conversation with him, because he was then feeling like, oh, do you prefer being with Dion rather than me? Do you love Dion more? Mm. And I had to just break it down to him and be like, Baba, like, the love that I have for you is unmatched, and the love I have for Dion is two different types of love. And I just had to make sure that I include him and make him, don't make him feel like he's on the outside.
And he will always be your first love.
Right? Oh yeah, 100%. Like, I always tell him that. Yeah, he's my guy.
And I guess you have to think, I mean, if you were to have another child, would they, the possibility of them having sickle cells, is that right? They could have that as well? So then
they could have the trait.
Okay, the trait, but not the full-blown disease. Okay, so you'd have to kind of figure that out. But yeah, no, I mean, I haven't broached the step-parent thing yet, and I'm scared to do it when it happens. So it's so lovely just to hear all your stories and like how you approached it. And I know navigating that, I'll probably be coming to you guys like, okay, help me. What do I need to do now? What do I do next? Yeah.
But it is hard though, because in the beginning with Dion and Riley, it was like, okay, he obviously wants Riley to like him and vice versa. So they were like friends. They were like playing all the time. Da, da, da. And then it's about having that balance of like, authority.
Has he told him off?
Yeah. So like the first, yeah. So that's what I'm saying. So then it's like, cause Riley sees him as, that's my friend. That's my best friend. Yes, that's my friend. And then when it then started like Dion telling him off, he kind of, it was like laughing it off or just not taking him seriously. So Dion then had to make the decision of like, okay, which one's more important, being his best friend or being the adult that he respects and looks up to? So he had to kind of draw back a little bit and just make sure that he had a bit more authority.
So
that transition was a bit like hard and weird. And
was it weird for you to see him telling him off? Like, did it make you go, oh, don't tell off my child? Or were you like, okay, this is okay. We can get through this.
Yeah. I think I was very much like just forever on Riley's side. And just like, even if I know Riley did something wrong or this, I might be like, yeah, but just forever back in Riley. But I realized that we actually have to be a unit. It can't be one-sided. And also I have to support Dion in it as well, because then it's just like, okay, it's just me against two. It's not going to work. So I kind of had to let that go and just also just allow him to do it as well. But then there would be times where it'd be like, not don't tell my son what to do. I didn't want to be like my son, but then I did have that feeling of,
side eye.
Like, are you really trying to tell me how to like parent my child? Like,
It's so hard.
It's
so hard. And we forget as well in the kind of blended family thing that actually regular like families, if even biological mums and dads have this thing of like agreeing on how to discipline and but I think everything just feels like super amplified if it's like a step family or it's really, really hard. It's not easy. But then when it works, it's really beautiful. You just step back in those moments and think, oh wow, okay, we're all cool, we're all chilled.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, that's
so
amazing.
What's in the future for Jordan? You've obviously gonna have a wedding coming up soon. We'll wait for our invites in the post. but what's next? What's in the future for you guys?
I mean, I'm just excited to really dive in with the SNL Foundation and help bring that, like help make that grow and bring awareness. So that I'm really looking forward to doing work with that. And then like during lockdown, because all we had during lockdown is time. So I had time to do something that I've always wanted to do, but I've always like put to the back burner, which is acting. So I've been doing acting classes and that's been really good. And it's something, acting has always been something that I've always wanted to do way before fashion. So
yeah,
I would love, you know, hopefully you guys will see me in a movie, on a TV series.
Not hopefully, we will. I have no doubt we will. That's amazing.
Yeah.
And you also do a bit of cooking.
Oh yeah. How could I forget? I love be whipping it up in the kitchen, and I want to be able to, no, I will also have a cookbook coming out soon, because like everyone's always just in my DMs like, sis, where's the cookbook? Da, 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 da. Yeah. So that's happening. And also, during lockdown, me and Riley have been experimenting making hot sauces, because like that's our thing. Like we just love pepper sauce. Like we just love it. Like in Riley, it's just crazy because Riley's tolerance is just next level. Like if you see the amount of pepper sauce he puts on his food, it's crazy. Like it's crazy. So like, yeah, we are in the process of like making up our own and figuring that out. And I told him he's my business partner. And he was like, yeah, but it makes sense that I have like, it's like 90-10 to me because you already got money. I'm like, no, little boy, it's not that.
That's not how it works.
He's like, that's rude, but you've already got a house. You already got money. I'm like, Riley, slow your roll.
Exactly. Fair is fair, mum. Come on. Yeah.
Sounds like my daughter, she has like the highest tolerance level for pepper. Like we got a chicken suya the other day from one of the Nigerian takeaways near us. And it's the only thing really that we eat from there because we're Jamaican. So we don't, I want to explore the menu a little bit more, but generally we just get suya. Let me tell you something, right? The ting was burning off my mouth. Like every bite I took, I'm there back in water. Sarai was there like, you all right, mum? She was nice, isn't it? I said, do you not want water? She was like, nah. When she finished, that's when she drank. I said, nah, this girl. But to be fair, she's always kind of had pepper. Like she's always eaten spicy food. But I can take pepper, but that food was next level spicy. And the fact she didn't drink until the end of it, I said, nah. But yeah, these kids coming up behind us, like they're completely different to us. Like completely different.
Definitely.
Wow. Well, I guess if Riley has any kind of like questions about his race, just show him the hot sauce. And
that's his
There's
claim.
There's no confusion there.
That's definitely his claim.
Jordan, thank you so much for joining us on the podcast today. And for those of you listening, as mentioned, my little tweet did go viral. And in response to that, I really, really wanted to arrange a blood drive in honor of Richard and also Evan. We've partnered Black Mums Up Front with a number of organizations, including ACLT. I felt that because this was sickle cell is an illness that predominantly affects the Black community, it was really important to partner with Black organizations. So we are partnering with ACLT and a number of other organizations with the backing of NHS Blood and Donation to facilitate quite a large blood drive in June. So we do hope that we'll have some more information on this soon. So please do keep an eye on our socials and website. And we really, really do urge for those of you who are listening, if you can, to come along to one of those donation days and please do give blood.
Yeah, yes. Because it can help so many people. Just as Jordan has said, it can help Riley, it can help so many young people. And, you know, every drop of blood counts. And you should know what your blood type is. Girls, do you know what your blood type is? No.
Amazing. No, I don't know.
I actually don't know.
Just Jordan, don't you know what your blood type is?
No.
Oh, I know, that's my goodness.
Jordan, tell her to come out your business, man.
Well, people, you should know I'm A plus, just so you know, just in case anything happens to me.
Yes, A plus,
the top. Well, actually, I don't know what O neg, I guess, is the most common one that I think most people can have. But yeah, no, I'm A plus. But yeah, no, thank you again, Jordan, for joining us. You know, we just admire how open and how honest and how upfront you have been. So please, please keep doing it and keep riding and keep pushing and make sure that every little black boy and girl who does have this is safe and never has to call 999 from inside a hospital ever again.
Yeah, absolutely. And as always, thank you to everyone tuned in and listening. Please don't forget to rate, review and subscribe to our podcast. And of course, follow us on all our socials at Black Mums Upfront across Twitter, Instagram and Facebook.
And yeah, like I said, keep an eye on our socials and we will announce more information about our Operation Blood Drive in June. And until then, keep listening and we will see you soon. Bye.
We host, we talk, we write, we laugh, we cry, we love. We are Black Mums Upfront.